I would like to start thanking you all for coming, especially thanks to my dear friend Angel Gurria, Secretary General for OECD, for participation in the launch of the joint OECD-FAO 2014-2023 Agriculture Outlook. I would like also to thank the presence of Sharon, Minister of Agriculture Affairs, Alternate Permanent to FAO from India, to join us in this opportunity. Special thanks for David Halland team and himself to work together with Jonathan Brooks and his team in OECD to present this report. I was informed that it is the 10th report that we produced together.
Yep.
And the 20th that
20th overall
OECD report. So it is a very special day for us, and I thank you offering this opportunity to do it in FAO headquarters. The report has become now a benchmark, let's say, a key reference for informs global policy process. We are very keen to keep this as one of our flagships publication. And I have to say just a few words about this year. Last year we did the same in Beijing. And at the time we had some concerns, not some, many concerns, I would say, about another, let's say, spike on food prices, but especially on the volatility that was foreseen at the time by the outlook. This year, the outlook message is more positive. Starting to say that the farmers react very rapid, very quickly to the high prices, and increase their production. Now we have more stocks available, and the forecast is that the prices are coming down from the peak of last month. And we foresee that it will be that way coming down for the next at least 2 years. I have to say that this is more related for cereals, on meat particularly, and in fish especially. There is not a clear trend by the moment on price, because there is a growing consumption, growing demand, and we also don't foresee that this growing demand will be let's say, like that, like the past years, in the forthcoming years. So there is some concern about slowing the growth on some of the big countries, particularly China, India, and so on, Brazil. And this could be bringing the consumption of proteins, special meat and fish, down. I have to say also that the special outlook for India is very positive, shows a continuation of strong growth in Indian agriculture, and we very welcome in a country that has a quarter of the world's hungry people of the world, the recently made bold move by establishing a National Food Security Act. I believe this example of India will have an impact for the whole globe on food security. Also, there is a strong influence of developing countries in the world trade. This is something also highlighted by the report. And the WTO agreements from Bali will need to be, tailor it in the forthcoming months, their impact on the future of the food prices in global markets. As you know, the WTO agreement in Bali opened the door for countries to have their stocks on food security, and this can help stabilize prices, at least some of the prices in some countries. Let me end just pointing that the report encourages us to be more ambitious and more optimist about the post-15 development agenda. I believe that we can say that the contribution of food security in the future we will have be more strong, and this could be among of the issues that we could set for eradicate hunger and extreme poverty, also due to this good performance of the agriculture sector, in particularly in developing countries. Saying that, I would like to give the floor to José Gurría. So, Angel, you have the floor, please.
As José said, it's 10 years since we've been doing this together, which establishes a tradition, you know. And second, it's the 20th edition in the OECD's launch of the Agricultural Outlook. I always say every year that the only thing we know about this work is that we're going to be wrong. But still, the world waits for it to be published, to be issued, and then to be able to criticize it and say why they don't agree with it. But then, of course, that allows everybody to, you know, take a hard look at the issues, take a hard look at the numbers, take a hard look at the possibilities. So we're delighted to be here. I'm also, I will not take it as a personal hard feeling that you took away our European Union representative from the OECD and took her over here. But there she is. Thank you very much for joining us. And also the Mexican ambassador, thank you for being here. And all the ambassadors who are joining us today, and good friends, and of course the members of the media. It is significant that India is, Minister, thank you very much, it's about India. Last year it was about Beijing, and we're going to be working with other important agricultural countries in the next few years in order to really complete the outlook. After all, this is for 10 years. This is why I said the only thing I know is that we're going to be wrong. Because things always take reality. Reality overtakes our projections. But this is because it's about production, but also it's about prices. And prices are somewhat influenced by events that are not necessarily just the fundamentals of supply and demand. Let me also say India has more farmers than any other country in the world. And therefore, the importance of world food markets is critical for India, but also for the world. What happens in India is also just as important. This year's outlook offers good news. It confirms that globally, production of most agricultural commodities increased in 2013 following the effects of adverse weather conditions a year earlier. As José says, we were fearful of the repetition of the price hikes and of the price spikes, and then of the spikes within the hikes, you know, which took it to very, and then bad policies that were taken by some exporting countries, which made the price even, you know, go even higher. So now we seem to be in a better footing. More importantly, it suggests that production will continue to grow to meet the demands of rising populations and higher incomes. We predict that global cereal production will increase by almost 370 million tons by 2023. That this is a 15-year increase in 10 years. We expect sugar production to increase by about 20% in the coming decade, and that biofuel production will continue to expand, albeit at a slower pace than over the last 10 years. And also, of course, more and more, as we say in this forum every year, that we will move more and more towards not burning food. Burning cellulose, but not to burn food. Because in the past, part of the problem and part of the reason why we had the spikes and the hikes in the prices was because we were burning the food. And now I think we've gotten wiser about that. And hopefully we're correcting our course. Now, let me leave a message with you. If I can leave one single message about this work. The world can grow enough food over the next 10 years, and it can respond to the broader challenge of feeding 9 billion people by 2050. This is our message. This is what we want to deliver to you. In fact, again, something we've been repeating over and over. Today, we are probably producing what we will need by 2050 for a world of 9 billion, except we waste about a third of what we produce. And the poorer the countries, the more we waste because of the lack of infrastructure. So it is a question of aid for trade. It is a question of organizing the flows. It is a question of building the right infrastructure. But we already know that the world, the planet, can produce enough food to sustain such a population. The outlook also offers good news when it comes to prices. Global markets are returning to more normal conditions. Indeed, over the last decade, the world experienced this major food price spike. And we had then two aftershocks, like in the earthquakes, which seemed, again, some turbulence. Back in 2007-08, the spike in food prices caught us by surprise. Droughts in several regions coincided with growing demand in the developing world. The spike in prices was aggravated by low food stocks, the hoarding of commodities, and then the trade policy responses, which, as I said, you close the borders. And so why do you close the borders? To guarantee the food supply. Well, that, of course, only made it worse. While higher prices pose a number of challenges, we should not forget that they provide important incentive to farmers. I said that it sounded a bit cynical, but that the big response to high prices were high prices. Because high prices were going to incentivize greater production, then actually the supply would grow and prices would drop. And that is exactly what has happened. The spike, this spike was corrected by precisely the fact that you had a greater supply. Whereas cereal production grew by 9% in the 7 years before the price spike, it grew by 17% in the 7 years since the price spike. So here, market signals helped. Production is on the rise. Prices are falling after a major spike. What does this all mean for policymakers as we look to the future? Allow me a few thoughts. First, we need to make more progress on the trade front. We saw how using trade measures during the recent period of high prices was rather like, you know, when you stand up in a stadium, now that we are so familiar with soccer these days, if somebody would stand up in the stadium, that first person would see the game a lot better. But if everybody stands up in the stadium, then everybody's worse off. And this is exactly what happened when, we were doing these prices, when one country would like to take a position of advantage or cover themselves, and of course everybody else did, and we were all worse off. We need to keep world food markets open, to build trust in trading relationships. OECD countries need to do their bit also. This includes reducing trade-distorting domestic support, phasing out export subsidies and taxes, and improving the terms of market access. At the same time, the international community needs to respond to the post-Bali WTO agenda. Agriculture was a major stumbling block in Bali. It almost cost it not to fly. Some were arguing that developing countries needed specific dispensations in order to address their food security concerns. Instead, we should be focusing on getting the domestic policy mix right. And this brings me to my second point. We still face a challenge with access to food. Higher food prices imposed undeniable hardship on the world's poorest people. They spend a large share of their incomes on food. And they also did more harm than good, these high prices, to the poorer farmers, because the poorest farmers in the world, more often than not, are net buyers of food staples. That means they produce part of the food that they need, some of this self-consumption, but they also are food buyers in net terms, and high prices affect them. Because they don't go to the market to profit from the high prices for their own product, but they have to buy the complement of their diet at high prices. We need to extend social protection to cushion the effects of price shocks, help farmers manage risks, and continue to invest in agricultural productivity so that farmers can respond effectively to price signals. Globally, we are making progress. The World Bank just reported that social safety net programs are being built on a national scale in 98 countries. We only had 72 countries that had something like this, or something approximating something like this a decade ago. Third, we need to keep a focus on improving productivity and reducing waste. This year's outlook points to the need for continued investment in research and development, as well as extension services. This is to achieve productivity gains, especially in developing countries. Investments in the infrastructure for food storage, for food transport, also have a huge impact. Post-harvest losses alone account for a third of the production in developing countries. This is in the report. I just want to tell you, this confirms again, we can make it. We are already producing the food for 2050. The question is, how can we avoid le gaspillage, the wastage of this production that is already there? With so many people going to bed hungry every night, more than 1 billion, you know, and we are wasting one third of the food that is being produced. It's a complete nonsensical situation. Now, we also have to rethink our biofuel policies. I am not suggesting that we do away with biofuels themselves, but rather that we take a much closer look at biofuel mandates and also at the subsidies of biofuels, which distort prices and introduce an element of inflexibility in the demand for feedstocks. Let me just give you a very small example. At some point in time in the United States, the biofuel policy and the mandates were avoiding 1 ton of equivalent of carbon emissions. 1 ton at the cost of $1,000 when we were pricing emissions at in the European Union at 20 euros or 25 euros, or, you know, the subsidies and making it at any cost that you had to produce biofuels and then subsidizing the production and the plants of biofuel. Fortunately, this is of the past. But this is how irrational all this can get. And of course, we were mostly burning food in that period. Now we have changed the policies, but the question again is, these mandates, which mandate that you have to have X percent of the mix in the fuel of a particular country, and that means you have to do it at any cost regardless. And the subsidies that produces, they distort prices, and as I said, they introduce an element of inflexibility. Changes in any one of these factors could have, just each one by itself, and then altogether even more so, a major impact on the outlook for world food markets. Achieving these gains in ways that are both inclusive and sustainable is a formidable challenge. So, José and dear friends, again, Thank you, David, and thank you, Jonathan, and where is Hubertus? Someplace around there. Thank you for all the teams, both on the OECD and FAO side. Thank you for India for the cooperation. It was invaluable. The implications of the report are clear. We're recovering for a period of marked turbulence in the agricultural markets, but there is no room for complacency. We must do more on trade, on productivity, and on tackling poverty. The OECD stands ready to play its role in partnership with the FAO and others as it works to promote better agricultural policies for better lives. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias, señor Gurría. Mr. Sharan.
Thank you. Let me at the outset compliment and commend both the organizations, OECD and FAO, for a timely and valuable study which succinctly gives a medium-term scenario of the world agriculture. India is the focus of a special chapter in the Outlook report for the current year in a series which focused on China last year. I restrict my comments to the chapter on India, which has been prepared with active collaboration between OECD, FAO, DFID, the Government of India, and many of its research organizations in the country. The overall tone and conclusion of the report are highly positive, as India's significant achievement in achieving self-sufficiency in food production and enabling a transition from subsistence to market-driven agriculture has been favorably noted. The growth of Indian agriculture has been situated within a larger framework of the rapid growth of Indian economy in the past two decades. Analysis of both production and productivity growth are mostly in line with similar conclusions arrived by domestic studies which have been heavily relied upon during the preparation of this report. Quoting from the Economic Survey of India for 12-13, the outlook stresses that fast agriculture growth remains vital for jobs, income, and food security of the population, and the significant role of Indian agriculture in the medium term to address these issues. The report also notes India's increasing presence in the world agriculture trade market, especially in commodities such as rice, cotton, soya meal, and bovine meat. While noting the emergence of these high-value supply chains, the outlook points to the likely challenges facing the sector in the form of stress on land and water, rising rural labor cost, fragmentation of land holdings, impact of subsidies on the overall fiscal situation. The report concludes with a positive perspective for the coming decade, underlining the basic strengths of the agricultural economy in India to support its thesis. At the same time, it also highlights the importance of India's macro performance and sustained high income growth for realization of the positive outcomes or realization of the outcomes of the outlook scenario. India welcomes the report and hopes that the triangular engagement which has started between OECD, FAO, and India is sustained, and the India chapter forms the starting point of future collaborations, which we hope will lead to eradication of hunger from India. I would end here by just quoting one paragraph from the study, this paragraph 9, which says that India is the top producer of milk, pulses, and jute in the world. It ranks second in the production of rice, wheat, sugarcane, groundnut, vegetable, fruit, and cotton. India is also a leading producer of spices, fish, poultry, livestock, and plantation crops, and bovine meat, etc., etc. For any other country, I would have been really happy to have these figures. But for India, this comes with a complement of one-fourth of the world's poor and hungry living within its geographical boundary. So that is the real challenge which faces us. Production coupled with huge rural poverty. And we are striving to address both the issues simultaneously, and we hope that in the coming decade, with cooperation from all of you and organizations like OECD, FAO, we will overcome these difficulties. Thank you.